Chapter 8.
What have you done to me?
Sabrina gasped, desperate for air.
Silence, you filthy, thieving topsider!
The merman barked as he snatched the piece of the vorpal blade from her pocket. He tucked it under his belt and then grabbed her roughly by the arm. Before Sabrina could struggle, he leaped out of the boat and into the frigid water, taking her with him. He swam deeper and deeper with Sabrina trapped in his strong grasp. She fought back viciously, punching and kicking her captor, but it didn't seem to faze the merman at all. Soon her lungs were burning for oxygen. Her mouth instinctively opened, and she inhaled deeply. Icy crystals raced down her throat. A curious heaviness filled her body, and she felt as if water were pouring into her fingers and toes. She closed her eyes, preparing to die. But after several minutes, something dawned on her. She could breathe. It must be the starfish, she realized. Where are you taking me? Sabrina demanded, as a wave of bubbles escaped her mouth. She was surprised to find her voice sounded as normal as it did in air. The merman said nothing, only pointed to the rapidly approaching river floor, where an incredible sight came into view. Nestled on the rocky bottom of the Hudson River was a city. It had skyscrapers, apartment buildings, and hundreds of mermen and mermaids rushing here and there in the neatly planned grid of streets. From high above, the city was a fantastically beautiful dream of green and aquamarine. But as the merman dragged her closer and closer, the city's secret began to reveal itself. Everything was made out of trash. Entire buildings were made from discarded car tires and license plates. The sidewalks were paved with old bottle caps and the heels of shoes. Homes were constructed from old clothes, wagon wheels, flip-flops, garden tools, computers, antique telephones, grocery carts, beach chairs, cans, bottles, and thousands of tennis balls, footballs, and frisbees, all stacked with expert care. The merman pulled Sabrina through the city gates and along a street made of crushed toasters and cast iron skillets. "Where did you get all this stuff?" Sabrina said. The merman scowled and pointed toward the surface. She looked up, then down again at all the junk. No wonder her captor had so much contempt for her. Every nook and cranny of the odd city owed its existence to 200 years of junk that people like herself had dumped into the river. Human beings were disgusting. He turned down one alley and then another. They passed dozens of shops carved out of sunken sailboats. Some still had their names painted on the side. Merman and mermaid shop owners stood on the street, calling out to passers-by, trying to get them to buy old pop bottles and bicycle wheels. A mer-mother pushed an infant mer-baby along the street in an old stroller. Soon, Sabrina and the merman reached an enormous palace, nearly 5 stories high. From above, Sabrina had thought it was the most beautiful place she had ever seen. But now that she was in front of it, she realized it was made of the same junk as the rest of the underwater town. A flight of stairs, which were actually old car bumpers, led to a large door which was guarded by a merman holding a dented trumpet in one hand and a trident in the other.
"I have the last of the topsider prisoners," her captor said.
The merman guard nodded.
"You may pass."
He swam over and pushed the door open, allowing them to enter a great seaweed-covered hallway. They continued through another doorway, this one unguarded, and down a flight of steps. At the bottom, Sabrina saw several heavy wooden doors with metal bars on their windows. The merman took a set of keys from his belt, opened up the closest door, and shoved Sabrina inside. Daphne and Uncle Jake sat on a bench in the corner of the room. Daphne looked at her disapprovingly, while Uncle Jake gave her a pitiful smile.
"You will be held here in the dungeon until Her Highness seeks your presence," the merman barked. "Then you will be given 5 minutes to plead your innocence or guilt. Shortly after, you will be executed, and your bodies fed to the lake's parasites and bottom feeders."
"What if we're found innocent?" Sabrina said.
"No one is found innocent," the merman said.
He exited the room, slammed the heavy metal door, and locked it tight. Sabrina turned back to her family.
I dropped the wand into the boat.
It doesn't matter anyway, Uncle Jake said. It won't work underwater.
If I am fed to bottom feeders, I will never forgive you, Daphne said. You had to use magic. Granny said there was always a price, but you wouldn't listen. What are we going to do now?
I don't know. We're in big trouble, Uncle Jake said. Sabrina and Daphne looked at each other. They didn't have to say what they were thinking. In the short time they had known their uncle, he had been Mr. Confidence. If he was giving up already, then the situation was really bad.
You don't know? Sabrina said. You've got an overcoat filled with magic stuff. Start searching your pockets.
I doubt anything will work. Magic doesn't like getting wet, Uncle Jake said.
We don't need any of your magic, Daphne said. I'll do all the talking. I'll tell the princess why we need her part of the sword. She's the Little Mermaid. She's really cool and nice, and she'll totally understand.
Daphne, this isn't the Little Mermaid from the movies, Uncle Jake explained. In that movie, she fell in love with the prince and was happy. But in the real story, the one Hans Christian Andersen documented, the princess gave up her entire life to be with her prince, and he abandoned her for another woman. He rode off and completely forgot about her. She's never really gotten over it, and is still a little resentful toward humans. Actually, that's an understatement. She hates humans, especially men. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
What does scorned mean? Daphne asked her sister.
It means she got dumped, Sabrina answered, then turned her attention back to her uncle.
So, what are we going to do?
Just then, the door flew open and two hulking merman guards entered. They wore heavy steel helmets and carried silver tridents, which they pointed at the group.
The princess will see you now, one of them shouted as he swam over and grabbed Jake. The second brute clamped his big hands on the two girls and dragged them out of the cell. The guards forced the family down the hallway and into a massive, high-ceilinged room and up to a pair of enormous doors covered in seaweed. An elderly merman with a bushy white beard and spectacles stood nearby at a podium reading a soggy book.
Yes, the old merman said without looking up. I have the topsiders who stole from the princess, one of the guards said respectfully.
The old merman took off his glasses and squinted as he examined the group.
Yes, yes, let them in, he shouted.
Instantly, a school of catfish swam up to the door. Each grabbed onto a strand of seaweed with its mouth, and together they swung the mighty doors open. The room on the other side was expansive, and though constructed out of trash, everything gleamed as if it were made from marble. In the center of the room was the back seat of an old car. It was strung with brilliant white pearls and sat on a pedestal of discarded milk crates. Sabrina thought it resembled a throne, but it hardly seemed regal. The merman guards escorted the girls and their uncle up to the pedestal and forced them onto their knees.
Show some respect, groundwalkers, one of the guards barked.
Just then, a door on the far side of the chamber opened and several mermen swam into the room, carrying dented and broken musical instruments. They blew some bubbly, off-key notes. Then a tall, thin merman holding a stone tablet swam forward.
All hail Poseidon's princess, Her Majesty the Little Mermaid!
Sabrina craned her neck to see the princess. But just then, an outrageously overweight mermaid swam through the doors and blocked her view. It wasn't until two mermen helped the enormous half-woman, half-fish onto the throne that Sabrina realized she was indeed looking at the legendary Little Mermaid. It took her assistants several minutes to get the princess into her seat, and then several minutes more for the mermaid to get comfortable. When she was done, she was wheezing like a tea kettle. Still, her overabundant body couldn't hide the beauty she was. She had big blue eyes and a mane of gorgeous red hair that flowed to her ankles. She wore a seashell bikini top and an aquamarine sarong.
On her head was a pearl-encrusted tiara. "That's the little mermaid?" Sabrina said quietly to Uncle Jake. Uncle Jake nodded. The breakup was very hard on her. She turned to food for comfort. The princess picked up a conch shell sitting on the armrest of her throne and blew into it. A low, rumbling note filled the air.
"I am hungry. I want a treat," she demanded.
The skinny merman with the tablet approached the throne. "Your Highness, if you will recall, last week you instructed me to not allow you to snack between meals. You told me to kill anyone who offers you anything that isn't on your diet."
"I'm rescinding that order," the princess said. "I want a treat. I've been good all day. I had my seaweed smoothie for breakfast and lunch, and I swam on the treadmill for 20 minutes. I want a treat. I deserve a treat."
"But, Your Majesty..."
"Treat!" she roared. "Now!"
"Very well, Your Highness," the merman said with a worried face.
"Bring the princess a treat."
A second merman soldier shouted,
"Bring the princess a treat,"
followed by another and another. Soon the side door flew open, and a lowly merman wearing a chef's hat and a white apron swam into the hall with a dented silver platter. He bowed before the princess, took the lid off, and presented a bright pink cake with squiggly legs poking out of the sides. She snatched it from him with greedy fingers.
"It's a anemone upside-down cake, Your Majesty,"
the chef said nervously. He bowed deeply, left the platter, and hurried off. The princess took a big bite of the odd cake. Sabrina knew her grandmother would die to have the recipe.
"Oh, it's heavenly," the little mermaid said with her mouth full. "I think I'll have another tiny bite."
She ate another, and then another, and another, until the whole cake was gone. She looked down at the empty platter and started to cry.
"My lady," the skinny merman said nervously, "what brings you to tears?" "I'm fat," she cried. "Look at me. I used to be thin. How could you let me eat that cake?"
"But, Your Majesty..."
"It's the chef's fault. I want you to feed him to the cruel crustacean."
"But, Your Majesty, he's your favorite chef."
"Cruel crustacean," she roared. "Now!"
"Feed the chef to the cruel crustacean," the merman assistant shouted.
It was quickly repeated throughout the room until a hulking guard ran out the side door with his trident. "What's the cruel crustacean?" Daphne whispered. Sabrina shrugged. "Uncle Jake, do something."
"What?"
"I don't know. You said you were good with women. You figure it out," Sabrina said.
Uncle Jake smiled. "Your Majesty, I think you're being too hard on yourself. I don't think you're fat. I think you're beautiful."
One of the merman guards stuck his trident dangerously close to Uncle Jake's throat.
"Silence," he shouted. "You will not speak until the princess has given you permission."
"Who are these topsiders?" the mermaid asked, as she licked the crumbs off her fingers.
"These are the ones who stole your portion of the Vorpal Blade," the skinny merman explained to the princess. He set the broken sword on the throne and then backed away.
"Is this true, topsider? Defend yourself,"
the little mermaid demanded.
"Yes, I stole it," Uncle Jake said, "but the girls had nothing to do with it."
"You are confessing to your crime?" the little mermaid said, surprised. "Most of the topsiders I have met are liars. Why would you admit your guilt and face almost certain death?"
"We need the blade to stop a Jabberwocky that is terrorizing the town," Uncle Jake said.
"Why would that concern me?" the mermaid said. "Let the monster destroy your town for all I care. Topsiders deserve no less. You are guilty. Feed them to the cruel crustacean."
The guards seized the Grimms.
"Wait," Uncle Jake cried. "There was another reason I did it."
"Let him speak,"
the princess said. Uncle Jake stammered, but then smiled and said, I have a crush on you. Daphne stepped forward. It's true. You're all he talks about. 24 hours a day, Sabrina added nervously. He thinks you're a total hottie, Daphne added, as sincerely as she could. He wants to marry you and have 1 million merbabies.
You're pushing it a bit far, Uncle Jake muttered to the little girl.
Is this true? The princess said. Even in the dim underwater light, Sabrina could see her blushing.
I stole the blade because I wanted to meet you, Uncle Jake explained. I have been all over the world and have seen a lot of women, but the rumors of your beauty could not be ignored. I had to risk my life to see if those rumors were true.
Nonsense, the princess giggled. I've seen the celebrity magazines that float down here from your world. I know I'm not as thin as they are.
Those women don't hold a candle to you, Uncle Jake replied. Why, I bet if you came up to the surface, you'd be in one of those magazines, too.
Every word that comes out of your mouth is a filthy lie, the princess snapped.
Sabrina gulped. It seemed as if Uncle Jake's plan had fallen apart, until the mermaid's face softened and a wide smile appeared.
And I love every single one of them.
Uncle Jake looked over at Sabrina and winked. Their uncle had his own magic inside him. He was one of the most charming men she had ever met. I know what I did was wrong, but I'm glad I did it. Too bad you're going to kill us, though. I would have loved to go back to the surface and tell that ex-boyfriend of yours how gorgeous you still are. He lives in town. I hear he lost all his hair and moved back in with his mom. He's pathetic. He got just what he deserved.
You say he is miserable?
Oh, yes. Just a shell of the man he once was, Uncle Jake replied. The little mermaid smiled.
I wish I could see his face when you tell him how great I am doing.
I could take a picture and bring it back, Uncle Jake offered. The princess giggled mischievously.
That's a very tempting offer.
Since I would be going up there and coming back anyway, you could lend me your portion of the Vorpal Blade. Once I'm done with it, I could bring it back to you with the picture, and we can laugh at how stupid your loser ex looks. The Little Mermaid and Uncle Jake laughed together.
All right, you naughty boy, the princess said. You've got yourself a deal. You are free to go, and you can take the blade, too. Oh, I knew you would be wonderful, Daphne said, clapping her hands. I saw the movie they made about you. It was so romantic.
Uncle Jake put his hand over the little girl's mouth, but it was too late. The Little Mermaid's face turned red and contorted with anger.
Romantic. Oh, yes, it was romantic. Unfortunately, it never happened. There was no happily ever after for me. He dumped me and ran off to marry some tart.
But he's bald now, Princess, Uncle Jake said. Repugnant, lives in his parents' basement. Remember?
He threw a lot of pretty words around, but he didn't really mean them. He got my hopes up, and then he left me for the first thing with feet that came along. But what should I have expected from a topsider? My parents tried to warn me. My sisters did, too. All topsiders are the same. They're nothing but a bunch of liars.
Your Majesty, it's obvious you are upset, Sabrina cried. We'll just take the blade and go.
As I suspected. You're not down here to give me compliments, the overstuffed princess growled.
She reached over and seized the Vorpal blade piece.
All you want is this. Feed them to the cruel crustacean!
The merman guards rushed to a huge wooden wheel that protruded from a nearby wall. Together they struggled to turn it, and as they did, the floor beneath the family disappeared, and the Grimms sank into the waters below. They tried to swim back into the throne room, but a dozen vicious-looking merman guards blocked the way. Trapped, the family floated down to the sandy floor below and looked around.
This is bad, right?
Sabrina said, eyeing the dark chamber they found themselves in. Anything called the cruel crustacean can't be looking for a hug.
Just stay close, Uncle Jake said.
Look! Daphne cried, as an enormous creature took its first step into the light. It was as big as Granny Relda's house, with 8 fat legs that ended in spikes. Its eyes protruded from 2 long arm-like stalks that wiggled back and forth. It had a massive shell on its back, and when it took a step, the ground beneath the family rumbled. Sabrina recognized the monster for what it was. The Chinese restaurant on the corner near their apartment in Manhattan had a much smaller one in a tank by the register. It was a hermit crab. A really big hermit crab.
Oh, I am going to have some really wicked nightmares after this, said Daphne.
Sabrina looked around the chamber. There's nowhere to hide in here. What are we going to do? Uncle Jake took off his overcoat and dropped it at the girl's feet. I'll fight this thing off as long as I can. He rushed forward, shouting at the ugly beast to distract it from the sisters. Sabrina snatched her uncle's overcoat and searched through its pockets. There's got to be something here that will help. She pulled out a red brooch with a black eye painted in the middle. She held it up, and for a brief moment it glowed with power, but then it fizzled out. Sabrina grimaced and shoved it back into the pocket. She found a little black marble hidden in another pocket and threw it at the monster, hoping for some enormous explosion. But it bounced off the hermit crab's shell and was buried in the sand.
What was that supposed to do? Daphne asked.
Beats me. I'm trying everything. While Sabrina searched, Uncle Jake did his best to stay out of the way of the hermit crab's legs. It was no easy feat. The crab used them as impaling spikes, bringing them down hard and pulverizing the ground. If one of them connected with Uncle Jake, he'd be a goner.
Let me help, Daphne said, as she dug through the overcoat's pockets as well. I thought you said magic was bad, Sabrina said.
Daphne scowled at her sister and stuck her tongue out to give her a raspberry. Together they pulled out a variety of odd-colored rings, carved totems, voodoo dolls, and some amulets made from bones. They tried to activate each of the trinkets, but with zero knowledge of what they did or how to use them, they failed every time. Nothing was working, and the hermit crab had nearly made a shish kebab of their uncle.
"Look for something that gives you a jolt!" Uncle Jake shouted. "You'll feel the magic if it's going to work down here."
Sabrina dug through more pockets, discarding anything that didn't feel powerful. Finally, she reached into a pocket, and it felt as if something inside had given her an electrical shock.
"What are these?"
Sabrina asked, yanking out a pair of slippers.
"The shoes of swiftness," Uncle Jake shouted. "Put them on."
Sabrina eyed the slippers closely.
"What do they do?"
Uncle Jake was too busy with the crab to answer, so Sabrina kicked off her shoes and pulled on the slippers. She immediately felt an energy, much like the one the Wand of Merlin gave her. It was incredible and powerful. Just then, Uncle Jake cried out in pain. Sabrina spun around and found him up against a wall, with nowhere to run, and the crab raising a deadly spike to skewer him. There was no escape for him.
"No!"
Sabrina said, instinctively running to his side. And as she did, something marvelous happened. Her feet moved so fast, she was able to snatch her uncle out of the way of certain death. In a flash, she and her uncle were standing next to a dumbfounded Daphne.
"Okay, that was cool," Daphne admitted. "I've got an idea," Sabrina said, staring up at the hole. "Grab onto my arms and hold on tight."
Daphne slipped her hand into her sister's. Uncle Jake reached down, grabbed his overcoat, and then slipped his free hand into Sabrina's. The cruel crustacean charged at them, but in the blink of an eye, they were gone. Sabrina's legs became a blur, and in no time, the trio was propelled upward as if they were attached to a powerboat motor. They rocketed to freedom through the hole, shocking the merman guards.
Sabrina spotted the Vorpal blade still in the chubby hands of the mermaid princess and darted in her direction. As they passed her, Uncle Jake snatched it away.
"Thanks, beautiful," he quipped.
The little mermaid screamed with rage, and a gurgling alarm was sounded. A second later, Sabrina watched as the massive doors to the chamber began to close.
"They're trying to trap us inside," Uncle Jake warned.
"Hang on," Sabrina cried, and started kicking, this time aiming for the narrowing gap between the doors. Again, the group rocketed forward, just slipping through before the doors crushed them to death. They streaked across the main hall, out through the gate, and into the busy streets. Kicking as hard as she could, Sabrina propelled the family down the road, sending mermen and mermaids leaping out of their path. Once they were safely away from the palace, Sabrina angled toward the surface.
"Any idea where the boat is?" she said.
"Over there," Daphne said, pointing to the bright orange anchor they had tossed over the side.
"I recommend we get there as fast as we can," Uncle Jake said, pointing below.
Sabrina looked down and saw an army of angry merman guards swimming toward them. Following on their heels was the enormous hermit crab. Sabrina kicked faster toward the surface. Unfortunately, she misjudged the power of her feet, and the group exploded out of the water, flying 50 feet into the air. A moment later, they came crashing back down into the river. Uncle Jake was the first to struggle to the surface again. He pulled Daphne and Sabrina over to the boat, and they all climbed in. Uncle Jake snatched up the oars and rowed furiously, but they'd forgotten to pull up the anchor. It held them in place.
"I can't breathe!"
Daphne cried suddenly. Uncle Jake dropped the oars and yanked the sticky starfish off the little girl's head with a slurp. Daphne gasped at first, but soon she was breathing fine and helped Sabrina pull off her own starfish. Uncle Jake shoved his into his overcoat.
"Might come in handy someday," he said, as he began to pull up the heavy anchor.
The first wave of merman soldiers leaped out of the water like dolphins, flapping their tails back and forth to stay above the surface. They were several yards away from the boat, but held their tridents menacingly as they approached the family. A second wave of soldiers appeared behind them, followed by the rising shell of the giant hermit crab. It opened its ugly mouth, and a high-pitched scream erupted from its throat. When the first trident struck the side of the boat, Sabrina knew they had to do something, and fast. She leaped to her feet, snatched a length of the anchor rope, and moved to the back of the little boat.
"What are you doing?" Uncle Jake said, as he finally dragged the anchor out of the water.
"I have absolutely no idea," Sabrina said, and she took off toward the front of the boat and leaped onto the water.
Her legs were going a mile a minute, so fast Sabrina couldn't even see her own feet. Each step was so quick she found she could run on top of the water as if it were pavement. She raced across the surface of the Hudson River toward the shore. With the rope in hand, she dragged the boat behind her, leaving a powerful wake that built up strength and slammed into the merman army like a tidal wave. When she reached the shore, she was so excited that she kept on running up the embankment, across some train tracks, narrowly missing the express to Grand Central Station, and into the forest where she finally came to a stop. Sabrina's feet felt like they were on fire. She kicked the magic slippers off as quickly as she could. The energy that they had given her quickly faded, and suddenly she wanted to put them back on, even though she knew they would burn her feet. She was about to actually do it when Uncle Jake handed her the Wand of Merlin.
"I found this in the bottom of the boat," he said.
Sabrina snatched it away, surprised by how greedily she wanted it. The magic swirled through her, and she smiled. Daphne gave her a startled, disapproving look, but she ignored it.
"Well, that's 2 out of 3, Uncle Jake said, holding up the piece of the broken sword.
He looked down at the inscription on it. "Beg the Hag of the Hills," it read. Sabrina dipped a washcloth into the bowl of cool water that sat next to Puck's bed and wrung it out. Then she patted it across the boy's fevered brow. He mumbled incoherently for a few moments and then went back to sleep. Granny and Uncle Jake were in the living room, busily searching the journals for references to a Hag of the Hills, while Daphne had long since surrendered to sleep and was napping in a rocking chair next to the bed. It was late, and though Sabrina knew a cup of coffee would keep her awake, the bitter taste wasn't worth it. Instead, she found that by lightly touching the wand of Merlin in her pocket, she got enough of a jolt of energy to completely refresh her. She wanted to look after Puck in case he woke and needed something. A wave of emotions overtook her. Emotions she didn't understand. Genuine concern for the boy, anger at his recklessness, confusion at the memory of their kiss. She felt like crying when she realized how vicious her rejection of him had been. "Hey, Stinkbottom," Sabrina said, wondering if the boy could hear her. If he could, he'd never let her live down any kind words she might say to him. Besides, trading insults with her seemed to be his favorite game. Maybe it would make him feel better deep down. "You realize you're a terrible burden on all of us. Look at you lying in that bed. You're not fooling anyone. I'd bet $100 that you're faking all of this just for the attention. Well, your pampering is about to come to an end, Buster. When we have all the pieces of the Vorpal Blade, we're going to find the Blue Fairy and put them back together. Once we kill the Jabberwocky, Red Riding Hood will be no problem. Mom and Dad will come home, and then we're shipping you off to the fairy folk. You'll be back to being a pain in my butt in no time at all." She looked over at her sister to make sure she was still sleeping too, and then removed the wand from her pocket. She laid it on the bed and examined it with awe. Just having it near made her feel like everything was going to be fine. She could handle everything herself. Puck would live, and she'd bring her parents home. Nothing could get in her way. "Are you okay?" Daphne asked. "I'm fine," Sabrina said, snatching the wand off the bed and stuffing it back into her pocket. "You were staring at that thing for 15 minutes, Daphne said. "I said your name a few times, but you didn't hear me." Sabrina shot a glance at the clock on the wall. Her sister was right. "I have a lot on my mind." "I want you to give that thing to Granny," Daphne insisted. "It belongs in the mirror where it will be safe." "It'll be safe with me." Daphne got out of her chair and crossed the room. She stood over Sabrina and looked at her closely. "But are you going to be safe from it?" "You're being silly." "No, I'm not," the little girl said a bit too loudly. "I saw your face when you used the wand. It was the same face you had when you used the shoes." "What face is that?" "You looked like you wanted to hurt someone," Daphne said. "No, what I looked like is someone who isn't afraid anymore," Sabrina said. "Daphne, aren't you sick to death of running all the time?" "The first thing I learned in Ms. White's self-defense class is that there are things that you stand and fight, and there are things that you run from. A smart warrior knows the difference." "You used to know the difference." "You know, when I woke up in the hospital, you claimed that I didn't include you in things anymore," Sabrina complained. "Did you ever think that the reason is because everything I do is wrong in your eyes?" "We are still a team," Daphne said. "And you are still wrong. You're getting what's that word Granny said earlier? Addicted?" "Yes, addicted." "Whatever." "Don't you whatever me." They sat in silence, and eventually Daphne got up from her chair. "I'm going to bed." "Fine," Sabrina said, still angry at her sister's accusation. "Be careful, Sabrina," Daphne whispered, and she stepped out of the room. A loud, raspy breath woke Sabrina from her sleep. The room was dark, and a girlish giggle sent Sabrina dashing to the light switch. She flipped it on and realized at once that she wasn't in her grandmother's room anymore. She was in her own bed, and standing by it was the Jabberwocky and Red Riding Hood. Sabrina reached into her pocket and took out the wand of Merlin. She aimed it at the monster and thought about big bolts of lightning rocking the sky.
"How did you get in here?" she asked.
The little girl laughed.
"Silly."
"Where are my parents?" Sabrina demanded, eyeing Daphne. She was sound asleep and snoring heavily. Daphne could sleep through a war.
"They're safe. I've got my grandmother now, and my doggy."
"You lie!" The little girl giggled.
"Granny!"
Sabrina shouted, but the old woman didn't reply.
"Mr. Canis!"
There was no sound.
"All I need is one more member of my family before we can play house. I need a little sister,"
Red Riding Hood said. Sabrina gasped, and the Jabberwocky took a step toward Daphne's slumbering body.
"No!"
Sabrina cried, and a flash of light exploded through the window. It hit the Jabberwocky in the back and knocked it to its knees.
"Stop!"
Red Riding Hood cried.
"You'll kill my kitty!"
Sabrina didn't care. She scampered out of bed as another bolt hit the downed beast. It screeched in pain. Dozens more blasts lit up the room. The Jabberwocky cried out as each one fried it with white, hot light. To Sabrina, the cries sounded like pleas for mercy, but she wouldn't listen. She wanted this thing dead, and soon she got her wish. The monster slumped to the ground, gasped, and was still. Red Riding Hood rushed to the Jabberwocky's body and cried in despair.
"You killed her!"
Sabrina smiled in triumph. She walked over to get a better view, but was surprised to find the monster was no longer there. Its massive, smoldering carcass had been replaced with the body of a young girl with blonde hair. Stunned, Sabrina dropped to her knees to see the girl's face. She brushed away the hair and gasped.
"It's me!"
Sabrina turned to the mirror in her room and nearly screamed when she saw her reflection. Her legs were gone, replaced with hulking, clawed feet. She looked down at them and noticed that she also had a long reptilian tail. It swung around the room uncontrollably, destroying the little desk and dresser. Her arms had become a scaly mass of muscles and tendons, with razor-sharp talons on her fingertips. She screamed for someone to help her, but no one came. She was turning into the Jabberwocky. She was becoming a monster, and no one could help.
"They tried to warn you,"
Red Riding Hood said. She laughed maniacally as she put a huge leash around Sabrina's neck.
"Come on, kitty, let's play." "Sabrina!"
a voice shouted. She felt someone's hand gently shaking her shoulder. She looked over and saw Granny Relda's concerned face.
"You're having a nightmare," she said.
Sabrina looked down at her body. It was back to normal. She had had another of her awful dreams.
"Are you okay?"
her grandmother asked. Sabrina nodded.
"Well, put on something warm. Your uncle and I have discovered who the Hag of the Hills is,"
Granny Relda said.
"Good. Where's Uncle Jake?"
Sabrina asked as she got up.
"He's downstairs having a drink,"
the old woman said.
"A drink? Why?" "To calm his nerves, I suppose. He's not too excited about who has the last piece of the Vorpal Blade."
"I don't understand," Sabrina said.
"Who's got the last piece?"
"The witch," Granny said.
"The one they call Baba Yaga."